Welcome to the AT Parenting Survival Podcast, where you get help and guidance through the chaos of parenting a child with anxiety or OCD. This show is for educational purposes and is not intended to replace the guidance of a qualified professional. Here's your host, child therapist, Natasha Daniels.
Well, hello there, and welcome to another episode of the AT Parenting Survival Podcast. Today, I want to talk to you about something that I think a lot of us struggle with, and that is how to manage our own anxiety, especially when our child is panicking in those moments where they are deer caught in headlight, overwhelmed, freaking out. How can we be their anchor when it triggers our own anxiety, regardless of whether you have an anxiety disorder or not? Just the anxious feelings that come with our child in a panic. So before we get started, though, I do want to thank NoCD for sponsoring this episode. NoCD offers affordable, effective, convenient therapy, and they're available in the U.S. and outside of the U.S. And you can schedule your free 15-minute consultation to see if NoCD is the right fit for you and your child. Just go to treatmyocd.com. That's treatmyocd.com. And I will leave a link in the show notes as well. Also, my free series, Survival Tools for Parents Raising Kids with Anxiety or OCD, is coming next week based on when I'm recording this. So it starts next Thursday, April 11th. And you can sign up at any point while the series is running. It will run April 11th through April 19th, and it is totally free. I do it twice a year. I have a lot of parents who take it every single time I do it because it's just a great refresh. It's a great reminder of how to build those survival skills. I give you some concrete tools that you can take away and start using while you're taking the series. So if you want to sign up for that, just go to atparentingsurvivalseries.com. I'll leave a link in the show notes for that as well. And I would love to see you over there so I can support you in depth when I do the series. Okay, let's talk about this anxiety, about our kids' anxiety. I always try to pick relevant topics to what I'm going through. Eventually, I won't have to because I won't have anything to talk about. And I can just come up with my imagination and survey my audience. But for right now, I am in the thick of things, and I really feel like I teach best from the things I'm living in the moment currently. And right now, we are really experiencing I don't want to call it a setback, but kind of like a hiccup, a bump in the road with my Miss 12-year-old, who is really struggling with anxiety attacks and emetophobia, the fear of throwing up, and which is a little bit tied into social anxiety. And I've been really practicing my muscle of not spiraling with my daughter. And when I'm trying to do these things, when I'm having a daily practice on a skill that I try to teach parents, it really becomes highlighted for me because I'm seeing where it's hard for me and where it's not hard for me and what is working and what is not working. And everybody is different, but it is a daily practice. And so I thought it'd be a great topic because it's something that I'm living right now. And I wonder if it's something that you struggle with as well, because I know in my AT parenting community, that's often a very popular request. We do live classes every Friday, and the parents in the AT parenting community decide on the topics. And so often parents want to cover how to handle their own anxious feelings when their kids are struggling. It's a really common topic. I've done it quite a few times in the community. And so I'm guessing that that might be a struggle for you as well, or at least for some of you. So I'm going to walk you through some of the first steps to take as far as when you're in the thick of it. And then after the break, we're going to talk about some tools that you can use to anchor yourself so you can be there to support your child. So the first thing I want you to consider before we even get into it, or this is actually the first step, is what triggers me when my child is panicky? And that will be different for each one of you. And I often talk about our parental triggers. And so we can be triggered by what it means for our child. And so it might be if they're panicky, they're not going to maybe be able to go to school. And if they can't go to school, they're not going to graduate. And if they can't graduate, they're not going to get a job. And if they don't get a job, they're going to be living in my basement. If they live in my basement, they're not going to be able to have a productive life, right? These, what I call snowball thinking, these avalanches of what ifs that happen. So the trigger could be what it means for my child. The trigger could be what it means for you. And so the trigger could be this, I'm a failing as a parent. I'm not getting a grip on this. I'm not helping her enough or him enough. I'm not, I'm being ineffective. I'm doing something wrong. My whole family is going to be disrupted. I'm not going to be able to get to work on time. Whatever that trigger is for you. And these are not mutually exclusive. I think we want to look at, and it's easier to do this when you're not currently in an overwhelmed situation. So a lot of things that we can do, the heavy lifting aspect of this can happen when you're calm and when you're reflecting. Maybe when your child's not around you, you know, you're not having a current crisis in that moment. You can reflect on this. What is my panic related to my child's panic? And today I'm talking about literally like an anxiety attack or like a panicky episode. Like I have done episodes on just how to parent your child with anxiety or OCD when you have your own anxiety or OCD. I actually have quite a few episodes on those topics, and you can always check out past episodes. The easiest way to do it, if you want to use a search feature, is just go to my website at atparentingsurvival.com. And then if you scroll all the way to the bottom, there's a search button, and just type like parent anxiety or your own anxiety, and you're going to see those keywords will bring up some episodes that I've done around that topic. But today is very specific in when they're having a panicky moment, because I feel like that's some of the hardest aspects to navigate for most of us is when they're really struggling. So identifying your triggers, whether it's the what ifs for your child, the what ifs for you. And then there's the other aspect of the third component, which I would say would trigger your own anxiety or OCD themes. And I've seen a lot of parents have their own themes. I've worked with parents who have intrusive thoughts about being crazy or going crazy. And then when their child gets anxiety or OCD, then there's a fear about them. Or I've worked with parents who have intrusive thoughts about harm, and then they're worried they're harming their child, and mental health is an extension of that. For those of us with anxiety, there can be a lot of triggers. I know for me, one of my triggers around my themes when my daughter is panicking is that it's actually the same as her theme, which I think happens a lot, that she's going to lose control in public. She's going to faint or throw up, and it's going to be embarrassing for me too. How am I going to handle this? And that's the number one reason why I panic in moments where my kids are panicking, is that my social anxiety gets triggered. We're going to have an episode. So three areas to look at. Your child's triggers, right? Like, what are you what-ifing about your child and their predicament and their mental health struggles? Your parental triggers. What does this mean for you? What does it mean for your family? And third, how does it trigger your own anxiety or OCD issues? So hopefully you can see the differentiation in those three topics. And you might have thoughts and feelings in each category. I definitely do. But when you start, I don't think we often pause and take the time to really analyze that. Like, why am I feeling panicky? What is going on? So I would invite you to pay attention to your thoughts next time you're in a situation like this, because your thoughts will help you differentiate what those triggers are. And I'm going to give you some examples. I'm going to walk you through my morning today. It's not really funny, but I'm laughing. I'm going to walk you through it because I feel like it's a great concrete example of what I'm talking about and how you can use your thoughts. If you pay attention inwardly as you're having those moments, you're going to get more information when you catch those thoughts happening organically in the moment. So we want to look at what stories are you telling yourself and what is overwhelming you the most in those moments, because you might be able to jot down or mentally do this some of your triggers. You might be like, oh, well, you know, I worry about this and then I worry about that. And then you have that baseline and then experience it and then listen. Listen to those thoughts. Pay attention to those thoughts. And it's really hard to do that. It is hard to slow down and pay attention to the thoughts while your child is spinning out of control and you are spiraling with them. So it takes some practice to slow down, to be intentional, and to go inward in the moment when there's a crisis happening. So be patient and be kind to yourself, because it does take time, I think, to be able to do that. So we'll use this morning as an example. So my daughter has had a setback with emetophobia. She had issues when she was in first and second grade. That's really when her anxiety and OCD really ballooned out of control. And then she started to manage it, and she's only had like little relapses since then with random different OCD themes. Emetophobia, the fear of throw up, and sensory motor OCD, the fear that she's going to have an accident or pee in her pants, are kind of like her two main ones. But the core fear is the same. And I talk about this in a lot of other episodes, how your child can have multiple themes and it can even straddle anxiety and OCD, which are two different disorders, and have the same core fear. And that's why identifying the core fear can be so helpful, because it's driving, it's the fuel line to a lot of our kids' anxiety and OCD themes. You might only have one or two core fears and, you know, a whole bunch of different themes and a whole bunch of intrusive thoughts or a whole bunch of anxiety. I do have a whole podcast on that. You just go to my website and Google core fear, you'll find some things that will pop up for you that might be helpful. But ultimately for her, the core fear is, I might lose control. I might lose control in front of people and it will be really embarrassing and I'll lose friends. And really at the core fear is rejection, which is a social anxiety theme. And she has social anxiety, but not in the way that most of us think of social anxiety. She's very outgoing. She loves people. People don't realize that you can still have social anxiety and have that. And so it triggers my social anxiety because I also am very worried about losing control. And I had the same themes growing up. I didn't have sensory motor OCD, but I had emetophobia. And the core fear was throwing up in front of other people. So now, like by proxy, when my kids are worried about throwing up, then I worry about it because it's my issue. So I have to work on that. I have to work on that as well. So a couple of weeks ago, she has celiac. And so she will often get nauseous, and periodically she will throw up, but we know it's because she ate something. So that typically doesn't ironically trigger her emetophobia. But that night she was worried about an exam the next day, and she got sick and she threw up, and her brain got hooked into it. What if this is because I was anxious? And if it is because I was anxious, then every time I'm anxious, there is a possibility, a higher possibility than I used to think, that I will throw up. And that just triggered a whole new mess of anxiety attacks anytime she has to go to school, be in front of other people, go out to eat, do anything outside of the home, which is really kind of what emetophobia does, is it makes home your safe base, and then going out of your home feels like a life-threatening situation. So I've been so proud of her because she is using all her skills and she is powering through like nobody's business. And it's wildly impressive because she is literally shaking and is going to school and going to activities. We're purposely going out to eat a lot because that's one of her triggers, so that she can learn to ride the wave and feel the anxiety in her body that she can't control while not letting it make her avoid things, which makes it grow bigger. And she is really the one pushing it. She is the one saying, I can't not go to this, or I can't not go to that, because if I don't go to this, then tomorrow will be even harder and the next day will be even harder, and I'm going to make this problem stick around. And so for those of you that hit bumps and you're like, oh my gosh, we're like back to square one, it is really good to see, you know, in action at my house, you know, to see that what I say is actually really true, you know, that they have those old skills, they tap back into them. And that is a beautiful thing. So this morning, and she's been, I was like thinking she's getting better and getting better, but I knew she had a field trip this morning And I was so surprised last night. She wasn't acting like she was panicky. And I thought, oh, you know, maybe she's, and I don't want to bring it up to her. And again, actually, well, we'll talk about this after the break as far as techniques go. But one of the things that I've done with her is I've asked her when she is calm, what helps her the most when she's panicky. And so I have an idea of, does she want me to bring it up? Does she not want to talk about it? Does she want me to distract her? You know, what are the things? It's helpful to get that information. And we'll talk more about that after the break, but it's helpful to get that information when you're not in that situation. And so she does not want me to bring it up. And so I didn't say anything to her like, I'm so glad that you're doing so well and you're not panicky about tomorrow. That would have triggered her panic. We don't want to walk on eggshells, but also she's in a precarious situation. And when she's doing well, I don't want to rock the boat for her. So this morning, she seemed okay when she woke up. And then I looked over and she's like literally shaking, like she physically is shaking. And that's when my panic started. Because if she's that bad, like a half hour, 45 minutes before she actually has to leave the house, it doesn't bode well for the end result because she has a longer runway for all that adrenaline and cortisol to pump through her body and to make her feel really nervous and to make her stomach feel worse. And, you know, those physiological responses feed the mental responses of, oh my gosh, I'm feeling really panicky. I might lose control. And then it grows the physical response. And so more shaking, more nausea, which feeds the thoughts again. I'm feeling sicker now. I'm feeling worse now, right? So it's this vicious cycle. And so when I see her feeling that way, way before she has to go, it's a bad sign. Because if she feels that way, like just right before she's about to get out of the car, she can handle it because it hasn't been happening so long in her body. So when I saw that, I was very, very concerned. And then that is when I'm having a response. So that's the part you want to start to tune into is interesting. Like I know it's so much easier said than done, but be your own observer. Oh, it's interesting that I'm starting to feel anxious now and I'm starting to feel it in my stomach. I don't want her to feel my anxiety. And even if we put on the best plastic smile, there's something called mirror neurons, and mirror neurons kind of are like contagious feelings, if you want to think of it that way. And so my feeling can be felt by her, whether I'm saying it or not. And that's why I want to authentically and truthfully anchor myself and not put on a plastic smile and be like, it's fine. She doesn't know I'm nervous. Let's just get through this. I want to do the work. I want to do the work for myself, not only because there's mirror neurons and, you know, her body's going to know that my body's anxious. It's just how biology works, which I actually find incredibly fascinating, but also it's not good for my health to ride the panic wave all the time symbiotically. Like that's not really helpful for me long term. And I want to be healthy and I want to be there for my kids. So I acted normal, you know, and I didn't say anything. She does take some medication as needed. It's an antihistamine, hydroxyzine, to just calm her down when she's having panicky moments, which really does help when she's having these crisis periods. And she asked for her medicine and I was like, okay, here you go. And then I went into my bathroom and I was still doing my stuff, you know, like my morning stuff, but I was noticing that I was feeling panicky and I was noticing my thoughts. And so tune into that. For me, just to give you an example of what this might look like, for me, it was, oh my gosh, she's not going to make it. There's no way she's going to make it to the field trip today. And if she doesn't make it to the field trip, I don't know if she's going to make it to school tomorrow. And we're going on a spring break trip on Saturday and she's going to ruin the whole trip. And I'm not saying it in a mean way. I'm just like in a concerned way. Like, you know, the whole trip is going to be really rough for her. And then it's going to be really rough for me. It's going to be really rough for everyone because she's going to struggle. And so I was catching that I was snowball thinking. And snowball thinking is just the language I use for when you have an anxious thought and it's growing and it's gaining momentum. And it's just a picture of a snowball coming down a mountain and building until it's creating an avalanche. We're adding and adding to the thought. We're not stopping the thought, reframing the thought. We're adding to it. Over and over, the story is getting bigger, the narrative is getting bigger. she's not going to be able to do this. It's already been 3 weeks. It's not getting better. So I was what-ifing all over the place in my brain. What-ifing for her, you know, I thought that she was going to have a handle on this. And what-ifing for us, oh my gosh, it's going to ruin our trip and I don't want to cancel it. And right. So I was just what-ifing all over the place. That's not really helpful. But I became aware of those thoughts and I said, okay, back burner the trip. That's Saturday. Today is Monday. Let's focus. And because I do that a lot with my own anxiety, I've gotten very skilled at back burnering. And back burnering, what I mean by that, and I teach it to my kids too, is it's if it's not happening right now or it's not in my immediate concern, I'm not going to worry about it right now. I'll schedule it for later. And that actually does appease my anxiety when I'm like, we will worry about it, but we're not going to worry about it right now. For some reason, when I tell my brain, we're going to worry about it, but not right now, it doesn't hook in as deep. It's not like, no, we're going to worry about it now. I'll just be like, that's not right now. That's not happening right now. That's not in my orbit. I don't need to worry about that. Right now, I just need to worry about getting her to school. And do I need to worry about that? Not really, because she has got her own tools and her skills. And what is my job in this moment? And so I always go back to what is my job in this moment and go from there. So catching those early anxious thoughts, right? Allowing my body to physically feel that, because the more we try to control our physical responses to anxiety and we reject them, I can't be feeling nauseous. I can't be feeling shaky. Why am I feeling nauseous? Why am I feeling shaky? The more we reject it, the bigger it grows. And this is actually what I'm teaching my daughter with her own anxiety attacks, is you have to accept that the body is having a false alarm and the emergency bell has rung and it can't be unrung. And so we've got to ride the wave of whatever hormones and chemicals are going through my body, but I can change my thoughts. And so while I'm feeling shaky and nauseous, and that's okay. So after the break, I'm going to talk to you about some of the steps and skills that I use, and maybe you can find some of those helpful as well, and try to use them the next time you are dealing with a panicky child. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. It's time we put help directly in our kids' hands. Introducing Crushing OCD Course for Kids and Teens.
It was way more helpful than all the other therapy we've ever done because we didn't really know what to do. So we weren't really doing it before. So the course helped to figure out what the exposures are and how to do them.
We're not in therapy and find it really hard to find an ERP trained therapist here. So we're currently with like the public health service, but again, they don't seem to be trained in ERP. It's filled that gap that we don't have that was desperately needed.
This was really well timed for us to use between therapists and to help us like start, get off to a good start with this new practice.
It was easy to use. I was able to do it from my phone or also on the computer.
There's different ages, you know, so there were younger kids, there were teenagers, and so that was really nice too, to have a variety of ages where it wasn't just geared towards younger kids or older kids. It was a nice variety.
It's helpful for our kids to hear it from this like third party as opposed to just us saying it.
I really like the offense and defense method. I love working on poking at OCD while it's sleeping. It makes it a little bit easier to do and it's kind of fun. I'm planning on using it to work on my fear of like holding your touching batteries and stuff like that.
So it was really helpful and I think a lot of other kids would like it. I thought that I was like the only one who had worrying about the weather and stuff. And then there was somebody else on there who worried about the same thing, which was really helpful.
Seems less scary to work on stuff now that I've watched this class and I'm more interested to work on it.
I like trying to do more exposures still and going to, before I wasn't, I just didn't want to do them.
I've worked on some of my bigger compulsions and been successful.
I realized that it was helpful to do like the exposures before. It was like really, really hard. It's still hard, but it's helpful to know that I need to do them.
Before, there would be a lot of battles about it. So it is definitely less loggerheads.
Really, really good course and super helpful.
Definitely would recommend this. It's really easy to follow. It's in nice bite-sized videos. I really like the worksheets that go along with it. And I think it's really helpful.
To learn more about this course and register your child or teen, go to atparentingsurvivalschool.com.
Welcome back. Okay, so before the break, we're talking about really tuning in and getting information. I always talk about getting data, getting information about what is triggering you, what thoughts are you having, what overwhelms you the most. And I talked to you a little bit about what happened to me this morning and the thoughts that I was having, that I was catching. So now I want to talk to you about some techniques to ground yourself, anchor yourself, so you could be there for your child. Because ultimately, our goal is to be as neutralized and as anchored as possible. And I often talk about being lovingly detached. I need to be a little bit detached from my daughter's anxiety in order for me to be the anchor that she needs. If I come in being overly invested and overly attached to her immediate panic, because I'm an anxious person myself, and even maybe if I wasn't, I don't know because I've never not been anxious, it's going to trigger my own physiological and emotional responses that will muddy my ability to be anchored. Does that make sense? I think so, right? I did a whole episode on being lovingly detached, and I think from the title, we can misconstrue that as meaning we're just going to have our kids struggle, or we're not going to get involved in their struggle, and we are going to go about doing our own thing and not become involved and invested in their struggle. And that's not what lovingly detached means. I want to be there for my kids when they're anxious, and I can't be there in the way that they need if I am bobbing up and down in the chaos with them. And so the first step is grounding. So being aware of my environment, bringing myself back to the now, right? I was living in the future. I was living in, what is this going to look like for our trip? What is this going to look like for her? Are we like on a new horrible chapter? And so with grounding, and everybody grounds differently, for me, it's bringing myself right back to the immediate now. And so I pay attention to my surroundings. You know, I'm taking a shower. I'm paying attention to the water and the heat and the smell of the shampoo and my hair and what my feet are doing. What am I doing today? What are my tasks today? I'm grounding myself in the now. And so that can help separate from your child, right? So it's like, what is happening now? And then for me, a very powerful tool is reframing my thinking. And because to me, that's the fuel line to my anxiety. And so I can calm my body, or I can accept the nervous symptoms that are happening physiologically in my body while trying to calm my body. But if I don't reframe my thinking, my body is going to continually get more stressed because it's the fuel line to my thoughts. And I teach this with kids too. And so how can I reframe my thoughts about today? And so I said to myself, you know, she's strong. She's so strong. And she has been shaky like this many times this past 2-3 weeks. And she has gone to everything that she's done. And if she doesn't go, then she doesn't go. We'll just have to take it one step at a time. But we're not thinking about our trip next week. We're not thinking about what this means for her future. We're just thinking about how can I support her? And sometimes when we pull around and it's not about us, not that we are intentionally making it about us, but when I reframe it and I think, I'm a coach right now. I am her coach. What does she need coaching on? What does she need in this moment? Not what do I need or how am I supposed to react or being reactive. It's as a coach, what is my job right now? What involvement does she need from me or does she want from me? And sometimes that might be different. It might be what they're saying they need and what you know they need might be different. With my daughter, not so much. She is, you know, I've just been really impressed with her lately. Her skills are so sharp that she knows what she needs. She is her own coach. That is the ultimate goal. That is why I talk about fostering independence and building skills so that independently our kids are driving and steering their own ship. And that is the ultimate goal. And, you know, she's 12 now and I'm really seeing that in this bump. That I'm not the one steering her, that she is really steering herself, which is incredible. But what does she need from me? Now, going back to what I was saying before the break, I have asked her, because as our kids change and evolve, what they need for us in those moments may look different, especially when they're panicky. And I have my therapist version of what I want to do, and then I have to respect her and what she needs in those moments when she's having an anxiety attack. And so the other day when she was calm and she was not panicking, I said, I wonder what you think would help you the most when you're feeling panicky. Because there's two thoughts that I have in my head. One, I can coach you. In the past, when she was in first and second grade, I coached her on red and green thoughts, which is kind of a method that I teach in my How to Teach Kids to Crush Anxiety class. And it's something that I actually teach in my book, Anxiety Sucks, a Teen Survival Guide, which I use for kids that are younger than teens. And so that's, and I don't use this for OCD, just to, if your child has anxiety and OCD, you can still use it for anxiety, but you have to be very careful. But I taught her that when she was little, and when she was in first and second grade and she was having panicky issues, I would prompt her and I would say, what are your green thoughts? What are your red thoughts? And we would work through her cognitive distortions, and she liked that. She needed that. In fact, the way that we kind of fostered the independent aspect of that was that she would write her red thoughts and green thoughts in a journal at school. So she was feeling panicky. Her teachers knew to say to her, why don't you go and journal your red thoughts and green thoughts? And that was a great way to kind of coach her and support her when I wasn't there to do it with her, for her to be independent. Fast forward, she's 12 now. She's not 8 or whatever age she was in first and second grade. I didn't know if she wanted me to do that anymore, or if she was, you know, independent. And she said, I don't want you to bring up that I'm anxious, and I don't want to talk about my thoughts. It's easier for me if you just act like everything is normal. And I said, that's great to know. And because I want you to know, I don't want to feel insensitive when I'm trying to act like everything's perfect and everything's great. I don't want you to think that I'm ignoring you or not validating your struggles. And so I want you to know that I know when you're struggling. I can tell when you don't even say anything. I can see it in your eyes. But I'm going to go on. And do you like it when I try to talk to you, or do you want me to be quiet? Do you want us to play music when we're in the car, or do you want it to be quiet? Is it insensitive for me to go on and talk about your day or talk about other things when what I'm trying to do is distract you? Because in the moment when a child is panicking, distraction is your friend. We often talk about how distraction is not a useful tool long term, because that coping mechanism of just riding the hamster wheel of distraction, it's not helpful, because then you're really avoiding learning how to really cope with anxious feelings. But when someone's having an anxiety or panic attack, distraction is your best friend, because you're trying to stop the false alarm. And so that vicious cycle of checking in physically with your body and then getting freaked out about what you're feeling physically, and then you get more freaked out, and then you're in this vicious cycle. You want to disrupt it, and distraction can be a helpful tool to distract you. So she said, no, just, I do like it when you talk to me, and I prefer that. So then I have like a roadmap of what to do when she's panicking. So if your child is able to articulate, that can be really helpful. If they're not there yet, then you just have to build those skills. You might come up with a plan together of what would be helpful and what would maybe not be helpful. But I do have a lot of resources on panic attacks and anxiety attacks. The difference between a panic and an anxiety attack is panic is what I kind of call a physiological false alarm. And so it's unprompted, typically. You can have one in your sleep. You can have one when you're watching a movie. And an anxiety attack is typically triggered by an internal or external trigger, something that's happening. Like she's having to go on the field trip. That's the trigger. The way they feel in your body are exactly the same. It's just one sometimes has an origin and one doesn't. And that's important when a child's having panic attacks and everybody around them is like, but why, what triggered you? What were you worried about? That can get very frustrating when you are physiologically just having a false alarm in your body. Just like if you're diabetic and your sugar levels go up, and sometimes it doesn't, you know, I don't know if that analogy actually works for that one. You know, I'm like, I don't know, but you get my point. So we have a plan, and it's a helpful plan. And so this morning I reminded myself, what does she need? She wants me to act like things are normal. And so I stayed away from her a little bit. I was, you know, doing things in my room and doing things in the laundry room, and I was staying away from her because I wanted to go about my business and not really be in her orbit, because I know that it doesn't really help when I'm anxious right next to her. So that was what she needed. She needs me to be normal. The other thing, though, is I'm monitoring her and I'm watching and I'm gauging, does she need me to interject here? So I'm constantly assessing the situation and making judgment calls, which, you know, you may or may not make the right judgment call sometimes. It's really hard to gauge. I was noticing that she was spending a lot of time in the bathroom, which happens when she's panicking, but then she wasn't moving on. She wasn't making her lunch. She wasn't eating breakfast. She was just kind of sitting there. And so I was watching the clock, and without panicking, I was like, what does she need from me? Well, if I jump in too early with, do you want me to make your lunch or do you want me to get you breakfast? She's going to realize that I'm worried about her, and that's going to make her more anxious. And so I didn't say anything. And I said, well, when the clock gets to, you know, this amount of time, then I'll mention something. And so it did. And she was still sitting there, because a lot of times she is doing a lot of work in her head. She is doing her red thoughts and green thoughts, or she's just trying to distract herself on her iPad. She's doing stuff. But I was like, I'm going to risk it. And I'm going to say, do you want me to make your lunch? So I said, do you want me to make your lunch for you? And I said it as calmly and as natural as I could. And she said, yeah, that would be great. So I made her lunch. And then I noticed she's not eating breakfast. So I went ahead and made her muffin. And then it was getting really close to the time, and I didn't want to like overwhelm her without giving her some sort of warning. And so I said, we're going to have to leave in probably about 5 minutes. Did you want some of your muffin? And then she said, oh, you made it for me. Okay. And so she came and she tried to take a few bites. And I knew she wasn't going to eat it, but I just wanted to offer the normalcy of here's your breakfast, here's your muffin. And I'm not adding anything like, you better eat something and put something in your stomach so you don't feel sick, or, you know, eating something is going to make you feel better. I'm not putting anything out there because that doesn't help her in the moment. So asking your child what helps you and what doesn't help you is really key, because I know at this age, she doesn't need me hovering, and that any attempt to help her is actually suggestive and will make her feel more anxious. And so it's really important to explore this with your child, what's going to work. It was totally different when she was in first and second grade. There'd be a lot more discussion. I was doing a lot more training. And it's just really refreshing to see that I don't have to do that anymore. And so that's the ultimate goal we want to get your kids to, and maybe they're already there, is they have the tools, they just have to use them. So, so she was surprisingly able to get into the car. And at that point, I'm not worrying as much because she's in the car. That's progress. And then the most beautiful thing happened. We're driving and she starts to say her green thoughts out loud, calming herself. She's like, all my friends are going to be there, and I really like my friends, and I wouldn't want to miss this because, you know, this is going to be so much fun. This is going to be so much fun. I'm going to really like that. Oh, look, I can see my friend over there. Looks like everyone's going. There are the buses. This is exciting. You know, I'm just so proud of her because I know her body was not giving her that message. And one thing that I've been trying to teach her, and what I try to teach kids in general around anxiety, is your body and your mind can have opposing messages, and that's okay. Your body could be saying you're dying, you are shaking, you're going to throw up, you feel sick, and your mind can be like, I know you're there, anxiety. I know the false alarm has already been rung and I can't unring it, but I'm doing this anyway because I know it's going to be fun and this is what I want to do. That's hard, but so powerful. So I did hover around my phone for a little while, but it's now 11:30 and she is already wherever she's already at the location of their field trip. And normally for my daughter, once she's there, she does okay. And I know that is a gift because I know a lot of you don't have that. The panic just keeps coming throughout the day. For her, typically, if we could just get her to the situation, she does better. And I know a lot of you actually probably do experience that too, because that is common as well. But now what am I going to do? Right? So this is the other part, is the debriefing, the silence after the storm. So do I hover over my phone all day? Do I cancel all my plans and wait for her to call? Do I worry and wring my hands? And I know that's really hard to turn off. And so there has to be some intention around it. And for me, it's a daily practice. It's not that I'm going to turn my phone off. In fact, I actually have started to wear my Apple Watch when my son was having a lot of problems in the beginning of this school year. And I have kept it as a habit. I used to not want to wear my Apple Watch because I felt like it was such an invasion in my day to constantly know when I got an email, which is all the time, or when I'm getting messages, which I get a lot of messages, or, and so like the vibrations and stuff were like, I don't need to know all that. But having two kids with anxiety and OCD where it can impact where they are, I have found it to be really helpful because I don't have to worry about it. I've turned off all my notifications except my phone. And so I'm not getting, you know, I'm not getting notifications through like a vibration in my arm. If I'm getting an email or a Facebook alert, that would just be so annoying. But I know that really I get very few phone calls, thankfully. I have a small little world, small little orbit of friends and family. And so if my phone is ringing, it's either spam or it's probably the school. So I can let go because I'm wearing my watch. I don't need to check my phone or my emails. I know I'll feel a vibration if someone's calling my phone. And this is a skill, and I think it takes a lot of practice to be like, that's not in my orbit right now. So now what, on to the next thing, right? That's happening out of my orbit and I don't control that. And so me sitting here wringing my hands or worrying about it isn't going to serve anyone. It's actually going to just tap me out. I'm going to have less energy to handle the wave of what's going to come afterwards. You know, she might come home exhausted or she might come home excited, but I'll be tapped out because I've been worrying about her all day. And I've had plenty of days like that. And I'm sure that you have too. And so when we are able to nip that in the bud, and I say when, because you won't always be able to do that. We're human, right? But you might feel jittery and anxious, but then you say like, what am I focusing on now? What is my task to do right now? I'm going to put my full attention into that task. And I think that's why mindfulness is actually really helpful with anxiety. And I think it's helpful with parenting too, is you're always training your brain on how to focus on one thing. You know, I'm eating and I'm focusing on my eating. I'm walking and I'm listening to the crunch of the dirt and the rocks underneath my feet. I'm showering and I'm paying attention to the water and the temperature. And when you practice mindfulness in that way, I feel like it becomes easier to do the things I'm talking about, which is, okay, my daughter, who I may or may not be having an okay time right now on her field trip, is that is out of my orbit. And what am I focusing on right now? Well, right now I'm doing a podcast. And after the podcast, I'm going to check on my son who's doing online schooling. And then after that, I'm going to go onto the next thing. And it doesn't mean that these thoughts don't pop up once in a while. I hope she's doing good. I hope she's having fun. Oh, I haven't gotten any notifications on my phone. Because I may or may not, right? That's the reality of it. I could be done recording this and then I get a call and I could be like, man, that whole podcast was a farce. But I actually wouldn't think that because it's life unfolding and we don't control all that. We just go one step at a time. And right now in this moment, my focus is here. She's out of my orbit. She is there. And how do we let go when we don't have control? And our coaching is over for the moment. My job is done. Put down that role. That role is over right now and on to the focus of something else. So much easier said than done, but it is a fantastic thing to practice in life in general because and to teach our kids that too. It really builds resiliency to know what's in your control, what's out of your control, what's in your orbit, what's out of your orbit. What do you back burner? What do you front burner? These skills become invaluable when you're dealing with bumps and hiccups and panic and your own stuff too. So I hope that you found that helpful. If you want some in-depth tools to teach your kids, do join my free series that is starting next week. It is AT Parenting Survival Tools for Parents Who Are Raising Kids with Anxiety and OCD. I don't know why I said AT. That was weird. It's Survival Tools. AT is the name of this podcast. It's a long story how that happened. It stands for Anxious Toddlers to Teens because I used to be Anxious Toddlers back in 2015. And now I do for all ages and young adults even. So There's a little backstory on that. People are always like, what does AT stand for? It's like, it's a horrible rebranding. That's what it stands for. So join us. You can sign up at atparentingsurvivalseries.com. I'd love to see you over there. We do on-demand videos during that series. You can watch them at any time the series is going. I open up a temporary Facebook group so that you can talk amongst each other about the videos. You don't have to be in Facebook for the series. We do stream bonus classes on the series website, and so we've taken it off of Facebook completely. And so it's just a really good time, and it's just a lot of information that is free and accessible that I gift to you twice a year. So I hope to see you there and get to know you better. And I hope that you find the sparkle in everything you do. And don't forget to rate or write a review for the podcast. It is March 4th while I'm recording this, but it won't come out until, when does this come out? It won't come out for a while. It will come out mid-March, I guess you're listening to this. You're listening to this March 26th, so a couple of weeks from now. But currently, my last review was in January, the end of January, and I don't like that. So if you can write a review, I would greatly appreciate it. I always show my appreciation by reading every single review that is left. So I read every single one, and I read every single one on this podcast as a way to thank you. And I think it's really helpful for other parents to hear as well. So again, find that sparkle in everything you do, including these panicking moments. Wish me luck. I hope that things remain silent, but it is what it is. It's not in my orbit. And I'll talk to you again next Tuesday. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the AT Parenting Survival Podcast. To get additional support raising a child with anxiety or OCD, visit Natasha's online school of on-demand classes at atparentingsurvivalschool.com.